Welcome to Mondo Hollywood. My name is Amanda, and today I am joined by a very special guest, Adam Smolik, writer-director of such things as Foodland and Horse Thieves, and a fan of director John Frankenheimer.
Absolutely, yeah. He's a fantastic director. I'm really happy to have the opportunity to come in and talk about him today, because I've always felt, and I think you and I have been talking about this a little bit, he's one of those directors that isn't really necessarily mentioned that much as one of the really great film directors. Actually, before the show today, we were talking about how he's actually never even been Oscar nominated for Best Director. And when you look at his body of work, of the various films that he directed, whether it was Manchurian Candidate or 7 Days in May, or even one of the films he did later in his career, Ronin, he's just a fantastic professional director, and the body of work is just outstanding.
And he's also a guy that people brought in. Like, if somebody was not working out, they would bring him in.
Famously, yes. Actually, there's an excellent documentary about the making of Island of Dr. Moreau. And this is like, I think it's on Netflix right now. And that was something about John Frankenheimer in his career, is he was this professional director for hire when films would run into difficulties and they needed to replace someone on the production, another director. Frankenheimer was someone that was able to come in at very short notice and get the film back on track. So, and but the tough thing with that is always whenever you are someone that comes in and does that, if you look at films where that takes place, it's very rare that you actually end up with like a masterpiece after. It's almost just stemming a lot of the bleeding, as it were. But like, yeah, on one of the other films that it would be in his sort of top discussed projects, The Birdman of Alcatraz, he was actually brought in on that one. Or another film was The Train, which are two Burt Lancaster films. But those are also excellent, excellent projects.
And we're going to play some music from those films that you were speaking about. But let's start off from 1962, a film that he made with Warren Beatty called All Fall Down. So this was based on a novel by the author of Midnight Cowboy.
Yep. James Leo Hurley. This is interesting because we were talking about this earlier as well. This project is All Fall Down is very interesting because if you look at everyone that's involved in the project, it's an A-quality production. They've got William Inge did the adaptation of the screenplay, and he's the writer of Picnic and Bus Stop. It has John Houseman, who's the producer of the film, who produced Citizen Kane, later won an Oscar for performance in The Paper Chase. It has Carl Malden, who's an Academy Award winner, Eva Marie Saint, who's also an Academy Award winner, and of course Warren Beatty, who won a directing Oscar. So the film itself is a very interesting project. I know that Frankenheimer in interviews had mentioned that he felt the film was a failure and it didn't do well in box office. But yeah, very interesting project.
But I think it might be a little bit before his time, too, as well.
Yeah.
So I do like that movie. Mm-hmm. And so from Alex North, the composer, here's the main title of All Fall Down.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that was the jazz version of the Manchurian Candidate theme by David Amram. And that was a movie that John Frankenheimer directed in 62.
Yeah, I'm tempted to say it's about 62. As we had sort of noted earlier, this is probably, Manchurian Candidate is probably the film that everyone references when saying John Frankenheimer. And actually, there was an interview that Frankenheimer had done in the late 1990s on Charlie Rose, where he said, well, this is the one that Charlie Rose referenced. This is the film that would be in the obituary, that's the film that everyone said. And Frankenheimer actually kind of dodged the question a little bit, because he said, well, I'm going to keep making movies, so maybe it's something else in the future. So I think he was someone that just genuinely loved the art of making films and directing, and it's a four-decade career for him.
He was very prolific. Like, he yep. started out in television and kind of had a feature film career and ended his career in television. But when television was, again, in its golden age, like HBO and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. Well, he got his first start. He went to Williams College in Massachusetts when he was 18, and then he graduated with his English degree, and then he joined the Air Force afterwards and was involved in creating like corporate style videos, instructional videos, and he found his way to New York and started to do directing. And he actually referenced this in many interviews that initially, when it was the 50s, there was a big craze. Everyone wanted to be a writer. Everyone wanted to be like Ernest Hemingway or F. Scott Fitzgerald, or like wanting to write. And so being a director wasn't something that everyone wanted to do, not until really the 60s and 70s. So he was able to kind of break into becoming a film director and doing, because he had his experience of doing those corporate style videos, or I guess back then they would call it corporate film or instructional film, and so he started to do Playhouse 90 stuff, which is a very interesting kind of, I guess it's in the infancy of television, where they would do very sort of basic coverage of stories, and they would condense things. So for instance, I think Playhouse 90 did the first version of Casino Royale.
Probably.
Or someone played played James Bond, and it's actually the actor that plays him. His name's escaping. His last name's Nelson. He was actually in The Shining. He plays the innkeeper, the guy that runs the. That guy's the first James Bond.
Really?
In Playhouse 90. Yeah. So Frankenheimer was doing those, and then he managed to get on to The Young Savages, which is his first feature film, which was released in 57, and it's a Burt Lancaster film. And really, a very interesting thing about Frankenheimer, his career is so interesting to read about because he just does unusual things. So, for instance, he directed five films from about a 10-year period with Burt Lancaster as the lead. Yet in interviews, Frankenheimer will say, Burt Lancaster and I actually weren't friendly. We actually weren't friends. And it's like, how could you go, when you're working a film and you're working so closely with someone, you'd think that they would have a rapport. And I just, for whatever reason, they didn't. And Frankenheimer was brought in on The Young Savages to replace a director. He also replaced somebody on, as we referenced earlier, on Birdman of Alcatraz, and then The Train as well. So there's, yeah.
And actually, yeah. So I've been rewatching the Burt Lancaster Frankenheimer things, because they're so good though.
They are so good together.
And it's, yeah. I can't, like how you say, like, I can't believe that they weren't even.
Well, the chemistry they have together, as like, if you look at the performances and every movie they made together, all five of the movies, like even Gypsy Moths, which is the last one they did, is a good film.
They're
all very good. And, Frankenheimer is very appreciative of the relationship in interviews of working with Burt Lancaster. And he says things about Burt Lancaster. For instance, he says Burt Lancaster, in terms of physicality as an actor, was one of the most athletically talented performers. And I always reference this whenever The Train is talked about, that sequence where Burt Lancaster runs and he slides down that ladder.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
That is unbelievable.
It would be a stuntman today.
And that's the thing that Frankenheimer says about. And actually, for anyone that's interested in about Frankenheimer, he also did director commentaries on his films, which is rare of a director of his caliber and of his generation. There's a lot of directors that actually don't do that, that want to have, like, so for instance, Stanley Kubrick, who's born in, I guess, 20, I'm tempted to say 1928, which is, he's roughly around the same age as John Frankenheimer. There's no director commentaries, and there's very little interviews with him. So if you want to study Kubrick, you have to go to other sources and read up on, and there's lots of stuff on Kubrick, but to actually go to the source material and watch and listen to Frankenheimer dissecting his films, it's fantastic. And he does that with Burt Lancaster films.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the difference, because maybe he started out on television and he's like not an artist as Kubrick thought he was.
Yep.
But he is like one of the great directors.
You're exactly right. He considered himself to be a professional working director. He wouldn't, if someone was to say, "Oh, John Frankenheimer, oh, you're such a fantastic artist," he would have said, "No, I'm a professional director."
Yeah, like there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, he obviously is, because you look at that body of work and the originality and the scope and the depth. And I think someone, I forget who it was, but said Frankenheimer is the originator of the action drama. And you look at a film like The Train, which is it's an action film, but there's some real drama. It takes place in Nazi Germany and involves a train that's being hijacked, and there's all kinds of suspicion and political intrigue. But that scene where Burt Lancaster does that run and he slides down that elevator, or not elevator, ladder, boy, oh boy, it's like unbelievable. And he runs and then he runs back, he runs forward and runs backward, and then he jumps on a train that's traveling.
I would like to talk about this later, because we're going to play a track from that after. But let's go back to his first film.
Yes.
Young Savages. This is the theme. And also very, starring Burt Lancaster, very like he's a lawyer and he has to defend a... But yeah, it's really good.
It's interesting. Thank you.
I'll sweep out your chimney, yes, and I will bring you flowers, yes, and I will do for you most anything you want me to. If we live in a cottage, you will feel like it's a castle by the royal way you're treated and attention shown to you. I'll be right beside you no matter where you travel. Yes, and I'll be there to cheer you till the sun comes shining through. And if we're ever parted, I will keep the tie that binds us, and I'll never let it break, 'cause I love you. Honey, I will bring you honey from the bee tree in the meadow, and the first time there's a rainbow, I'll bring you a pot of gold. I'll take all your troubles and I'll throw them in the river, and a bundle down beside you, and I'll keep you from the cold. I'll be right beside you no matter where you travel. Yes, and I'll be there to cheer you till the sun comes shining through. And if we're ever parted, I will keep the tie that binds us, and I'll never let it break, 'cause I love you.
Welcome back to Mondo Hollywood on 101.5 Yum FM. I'm here with Adam Smolik, and we are talking about John Frankenheimer. And we have just listened to a couple of his tracks, including from the Birdman of Alcatraz soundtrack with Elmer Bernstein, Maurice Jarre with The Hub from The Train, which is an amazing film. And then we just heard Johnny Cash with 'Cause I Love You from 1970's I Walk the Line. And The Train is amazing.
Yes. 1965 release. As we said before, he replaced another director on it. And I think you made a really interesting point. I never thought about it before, but you can definitely see, when you see The Train, other films that are riffing or doing a lot of homages to the film itself. It's a very quick-moving action film, but also has the dramatic aspects in it as well. Paul Scofield, Academy Award winner in his own right, is I guess he's the antagonist in the film, and centered around Nazi Germany and a train that's being hijacked. And it's a fantastic project, shot in black and white as well, which is starting to be phased out during that period in late 60s or mid 60s.
Well, yeah, and because The Apartment was like the last film before Schindler's List that won in black and white.
Yep.
And but it is also has a lot of real effects, because there are things where they do with the train, like explosions.
Yep. Well, even there's a scene where they put a camera on the track, and a train goes off the track and goes over. It's very strange. Actually, when Frankenheimer does the commentary, this weird shot that they got, and he said, you could never get that shot ever again. Like, just because this train, they'd never allow you to do this, but a train goes off the track and runs over the camera, and it gets the perfect coverage, the perfect shot of that happening, of a derailment,
yeah,
basically. Well, and they're not going to let you do that. Like, the authorities wouldn't let you do that.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
It would be a CGI now, and that whole film has their real in-camera effects.
Yeah, and even, like, just the ending of it is so devastating. It's just like, yeah, it's like the whole trajectory of this character going through. He's like, I gotta like make sure this art does not get stolen by the Nazis. I'm gonna give it back to the Americans, and it's all for naught. It's a very really great movie.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not a war movie person, but this is not a war movie. This is just action.
Well, just again, going back to the whole body of work, whether there was a sweet spot there, I think, in terms of his early career with, he was on a roll. Like, you look at Manchurian Candidate, 7 Days in May, which is also a political thriller, stars Burt Lancaster again. It's an adaptation by Rod Serling of Twilight Zone fame. Then, you know, he goes into The Train. And Seconds comes up in 66.
Yeah.
Just a really great body of work.
And that's what I have lined up next is Jed Goldsmith from that film, Seconds, and was starring Rock Hudson.
Yeah, actually, this film's interesting. It's another film that underperformed at the box office. It's essentially about people that are getting the chance to inhabit someone else's body by a radical surgery where they're able to do reconstruction on a person. It's interesting because people aren't really sure as to how, when you watch the film, you have to watch it a couple times to really understand exactly what the surgery is. But essentially, they're getting a cadaver and then they're implanting someone else on top of the frame, the body of the kind of, I guess it's another person. So it's giving rich businessmen the chance to live again and live in the body of someone else. So it's a very unusual film. Scorsese actually references it in a documentary he does about films. It's one of the last. He says he doesn't want to talk about film in this documentary, about films that were made in his sort of career, which essentially is like early 70s onward. So Seconds is one of those films in the late 60s. It's before his career that he gets the chance to talk about. But very interesting project. shot in black and white as well.
And it did win it was nominated for an Oscar for its cinematography.
James Hong, I think, is the...
Yeah, it's very stunning to look at.
Yeah, a lot of fisheye lenses and weird angles. And he also did that DP, or cinematographer, also did Sweet Smell of Success, mm-hmm. that I think he also might have won an Oscar for, but yeah.
Yeah, James Wong Hao, I think. Yeah. And a movie ahead of its time a little bit. And the soundtrack here is by Jerry Goldsmith. This is Russell Sowers.
Thank you.
and welcome back to Mondo Hollywood. We just heard from 52 Pickup, Gary Chain, a late 80s film by Frankenheimer. And before that, we listened to Jerry Goldsmith from The Traitor, the Challenge soundtrack. Another like 82 offering. In the 80s, he kind of went with rails.
Yeah, I think he admits too of having some personal struggles in that period of time in interviews. And I think where this kind of all started to be his career-wise might have struggled a bit was it started really with Black Sunday, which was a major studio release. I'm tempted to say it was a Paramount film. And that's around, was it 75, 77?
Seven.
77. And what's interesting, 77 is the year of Star Wars, right? So that totally, absolutely changed the industry, that production. And it went from, you know, films like A Black Sunday prior to that point would have been, you know, a big smash of a film. But it was a film that I believe underperformed. And I think movie tastes had changed in that period. So a film like that didn't do as well as perhaps, you know, other films such as like a Star Wars or Jaws. Fantasy started to become a lot more were the types of films that moviegoers were wanting to more so see in that period. So you had, you know, even like Superman or Rocky was in that period, although that wasn't a fantasy type of film, but moviegoers tastes had changed. And so Frankenheimer, really from the late 70s onward, went through sort of a difficult period. And if you look at some of his films during that period, whether it was The Challenge or other films, he really didn't capture the initial kind of success that he had in the first sort of quarter of his career. If you were to look at Frankenheimer, you could kind of break it up into quarters because his career really was about 40 years in length. And that period of time probably was a low point creatively and artistically, late 1970s, 1980s as well.
Yeah, because I also watched a film called Prophecy that he made. It was a horror film, and it was just garbage.
Yeah.
Like around 79 or around that. And I forgot to also mention that we played Henry Mancini's main title for 99 and 4400. I don't even know how to say
title. There's the trouble right there. If you have a title that moviegoers struggle to say, that's a problem.
And like even Richard Harris.
I don't even want to try it because it's like, what is this?
And apparently, it's like a soap thing, like a Dove soap or Ivory soap thing.
But I've never seen the film.
Not either.
Yeah.
It's a good score.
Yeah.
But yeah, the same thing. And I think it's probably like a James Bond kind of.
Okay,
I have no
spy
idea.
Spy intrigue or whatever, I don't know. I don't even know about that film. I know it was just one that didn't, it wasn't listed as one of the ones that is to see. I mean, the ones that are really the strong in terms of his career, Manchurian Candidate. I would throw in the Burt Lancaster film there, 7 Days in May. The Train. There's actually like that period of like he was in his early to mid 30s during that period when he was making those films. Those are three films right there that are really strong. I'd throw Ronin as well.
French Connection 2.
French Connection 2 is a good film. Yeah, that's 75.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were mentioning Gypsy Moths before.
Oh, Gypsy Moths is very good.
And
yeah.
Gene Hackman was a early role on that, like right after.
He was in his 30s at that point.
Yeah. And very like that's a good like I was talking to you before because Burt Lancaster and Deborah Carr were in From Here to Eternity.
Yep.
And like they were nominated for Oscars and all this kind of stuff. And she's actually like nude in this film. Which
yeah.
I think they tried to make like a point like, hey, audiences, like remember
well,
them?
that was definitely a selling feature of that film, which is From Here to Eternity, I imagine would be 51,
yeah.
And then having them 18 years later come back and be in Gypsy Moths, the selling point of the film is, oh, reuniting, you know, Burt Lancaster and Deborah Carr together, who were in that famous shot From Here to Eternity where they're on the beach together kissing,
yeah.
And, you know, as a selling feature of the film. And I like Gypsy Moths. It's an interesting film.
Yeah, and one of my favorite character actors, Scott Wilson, has a prominent role in it.
That's right,
I love him. And
he's great.
He's good in it as well.
Yeah.
So I guess Frankenheimer started out his career in television, kind of ended his career in television.
Yeah, I think Paths of War was his last released film, tended to say 2002, which is about Lyndon Johnson's presidency and the difficulties of Vietnam. It's got a really great cast. Is it Michael Garabon, I think his name is? He's playing Lyndon Johnson. And then Alec Baldwin is playing Robert McNamara. And it's about the goings-on and difficulties of the Vietnam War. And I think it is a two-part miniseries. But Frankenheimer is interesting because he was actually probably the first big director to actually start to direct HBO movies.
Yeah. And even before that, just cable network things, like that's before. Nowadays, we assume like Netflix and like Westworld and
yeah, like we don't separate generationally. Like we don't separate. I think the element of theatrically released films or Netflix. I don't think we really pay, like, people that are born in the 70s, 80s, and 90s don't look at theatrically released feature films as being something greater than a television film or a Netflix film or whatever. You're just seeing it for the content. Where back in the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, being involved in TV versus being involved in theatrically released films was really seen as a step down. And Frankenheimer, in terms of his career in the 80s, when he was initially offered those HBO films, he wasn't interested. He actually tells a story about this and says someone approached him. I think it's Andersonville was the first film that he was approached to do. And a producer, is an interesting story, but basically said, like, John, you're a working director. You should take this, read the project. And Frankenheimer initially didn't even want to read it because he didn't want to do television movies. He felt it was a step down, but then he realized that this producer is totally right. This is a good project and he should do it. So he in some ways actually ushered in a period of making it acceptable for famous, capable directors to actually go back and forth between theatrically released films and television movies.
And I would also, yeah, because Friedkin did it with 12 Angry Men later,
yep,
98 or so. So yeah, he was like, he brought it back almost.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it's interesting because his career, he started in TV and then he went back to TV, although he was still in that period of time, or later, he did actually go back and do some theatrically released films. So, for instance, a really great film, I would put that in the top five Frankenheimer films, Ronin. The car chases are unbelievable. And I should mention as well, and I didn't say this, we haven't said this so far, but actually Frankenheimer was fluently bilingual in French, so he could speak French and English. So he actually worked in France actually quite extensively and was brought on to do Ronin because of the fact that he was working with a French crew. And then that's the same thing as French Connection, which was shot in France. So the follow-up to, I guess, the Academy Award-winning film, French Connection 2, takes place in France with Popeye Doyle tracking down
addicted to heroin.
And there's a sequence where the villain gets Popeye Doyle addicted to heroin as sort of like a twist to the film. But yeah, Frankenheimer did work extensively in Europe and particularly France because of the fact that he could work with the French crew and speak French. Huge advantage.
Yeah. We're getting up to the end of the show, and I want to thank you again, Adam, for being here today to talk us about John Frankenheimer, who would have been, he passed away in the year 2002, 72, but he would have been like 88 if he had lived.
Yeah, he'd be 88 right now. He was supposed to do the last, I think it was an Exorcist film that was supposed to come out.
Oh, with Paul Schrader.
They brought him in because Frankenheimer passed away. He was still, the sad thing is when he passed away, if you see photos of him in that period of time, he had a stroke as a result of back surgery. So Frankenheimer actually, it was, his passing was rather sudden.
Yeah. Because he was still trying to work.
Still working, and he was always athletic his whole life. He's actually a really, if you see photos of him, he was actually like a really big, tall guy, which is, you know, directors don't tend to be known for being athletic, but he was a big, tall, athletic tennis player and in good shape. And when you see photos of him from 2000, 2001, he looked very virile, very strong, and very sad thing to happen because I think he still would be working.
Yeah. So we're going to close off today's show with the George Wallace 1997 television film that he did starring Gary Sinise about the poet, like politics guy. But it's a good movie.
And there's a surprise in that film. Young Angelina Jolie is in it.
Oh, really?
She's got a couple scenes right in the beginning.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
It's been a while. So here is Louis Armstrong with We Shall Overcome. And thanks for listening to Mondo Hollywood. Stay tuned for Rami Mays coming up next.
We shall overcome. We shall before, the old Satchmo.